This is The Good Die Young, the podcast where we take you on deep dives through single season shows you didn't even know existed. Join us each week as we explore what's best about these lost gems. This is The Good Die Young. Season 2. Happy Town. All right, welcome back for the last time of Season 2. Happy Town is now over. All of your questions are antlered. Everything is sewn up. The show is just done.
No blue door left open. So
so this is Les, of course, your host for Good Die Young, and I am here, as always, this season with the lovable Nick Tice.
Oh, of course. Well, you know me. Whenever I get a feeling of a good podcast, I'm going to be on a good podcast, I get this electricity on my tongue, and this baby, ooh, it's been buzzing all day.
Oh man, see, what are you gonna do without all your Danisms? And you know, you're gonna watch other shows and characters are just gonna talk like people, like sane normal people.
I am gonna use crazy as a crazier than a pit bull spitting out peach pits or whatever Dan said. Because that's so great, because it doesn't need to make sense, because it doesn't even make sense in the show. Like, even with context, that is ridiculous thing to say, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's up there with, they call me gazpacho, because I like my soup cold.
Okay, wait.
Oh, man, I got to hear, I just yesterday got done editing episode 7, and that's where that line was, and oh, man, gazpacho.
They call me medium because I like a little pink in my steak. What does that mean? What is the brag there? I don't understand, Dan.
So I can only assume any listener in the wrap up of this season knows what we're talking about at this point. I just have to assume that everybody at home has been with us through all of Happy Town so far. Nick, you first got into my whole Good Die Young idea during the middleman season. I roped you in for, did you get to do the fish zombie episode?
Or did I? No, Les, I did not. I specifically said that I wanted to do the fish zombie episode. And I was pretty bitter about it at the time. I'm not going to lie.
Right. That's right. I forgot. We screwed you out of that one.
And yeah, we made it up no for big you. Deal. I don't even remember. I don't even remember Mike Moody totally screwing me out of that one.
So. And we made it up to you by Happy Town.
What a great makeup. No, I did the Kevin Sorbo Frozen Middleman episode.
Oh, right.
And then what was it?
Tuba episode?
No, I can't quite remember. Yeah, I had two episodes. It was the Kevin Sorbo one, and I forget what the other one was. Oh, Titanic.
I thought it was the immortal tuba. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The icy cold depths of the Atlantic. Yeah. So then me asking you to do Happy Town, I guess I should ask, what, in terms of like the one season show concept and everything, I have to assume that was at least a little bit appealing to you, but was there anything about it that particularly caught your eye or was fun to talk about?
Well, I think you and I share a interest in, when we watch a show, we're not exactly watching a show or a movie. We like to think about it as, I don't know about you, but I picture the boardroom meeting where they pitch like an idea or something, like who pitched this and who said this. And I love the, like, picturing that for like certain things, like, okay, who got this in there? Like, one of my favorite ones from before is, have you ever seen Chopping Mall?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a line in there. There's a line in there that's so crazy. I always imagine the pitch meeting in it, like they're trying to make the joke, because they introduce these killer robots and then they're like, oh man, these things look great. And then one person, and they zoom in on him, so you're supposed to hear him, and he says the weirdest random thing, which is, no, I don't know, the one on the right looks vaguely ethnic. And then they move, and then they move on, and the robots are identical. And that one always stuck out to me. I'm like, how did that line get in there? What is that line accomplishing? Who snuck that in? Was it a big boardroom? Was he just there on set and that was just something like, hey, just say something weird. Like, why is it so randomly racist for no reason? Like, I'm fascinated by certain decisions there of like, okay, who did that? Who's responsible for this? And Happy Town has like all of those. Like, it's like you said, like a writer's room almost vindictively writing to a point of like, oh, you're not supposed to do this in a show like this? Well, fuck it. We're going to do it twice. Oh, yeah, we're going to set this thing up.
There are moments where it seems like these are lines or situations that they were expressly told not to put in another show. Like, and I remember when I got told not to do this, I'm getting it on screen somewhere, damn it.
They said a giant bird would be stupid on Supernatural. I'll show them. I'll
show them. What's its name? Cicero? Shut up. I actually emailed Meredith Averill after we spoke, after our interview, just to ask, like, hey, I forgot to bring it up. The cinnamon monologue, was that you? And I mean, like, there's so many moments in this show, like every episode's got some line where I want to, you know, where you want to ask the writer, like, man, was that you or Rosenberg or Applebaum or Nimick or who? And most of the time, honestly, the weirder shit. Oh, it wasn't the cinnamon monologue. Well, the cinnamon monologue was Rosenberg and not Averill, but.
Well, I want to see the whole the birth of the cinnamon monologue. I want to see where it's written. I want to see where it's pitched. I want to see the actors read it for the first time and go, what? Then I want to see the three or four takes where Henley's actor, I can't remember her name right now, just breaks down and is like, wait, what are you fucking saying during the takes? Like, there's no way they did that in one, right? Like, there's no way.
Well, and now I want to ask if Scott Rosenberg's grandfather and my grandfather knew each other or something, because the sharp as a bag of wet mice is a Rosenberg line. And not Averill. And she was like, yeah, I don't know where Scott came up. And like, well, I mean, I know where he came up with it with. It's either his dad or granddad. It's got to be like, I really want to look up like, did Rosenberg's granddad serve with mine in fucking World War II or something? Who comes back with these weird ass sayings?
The dialogue on Anytown, there's a certain language that it uses where it's just not quite English. Right. Like, they use English words, but like, there's just a different level of like, people can just say the weirdest shit. And obviously in this universe, it's a totally normal thing to say every day.
Yeah.
Because they just keep moving on.
Yeah. What among
like, no one calls out Dan for being super weird. Like
every time. Yeah. When they finally call the state police on him, it is not just for him being Dan. You know, like, you should have called days ago. Do you really? No one in this police station gets any funky vibes off that dude. None. Yeah. Yeah. And then you get
Dexter
lines
is
like,
more subtle than Dan.
It's a McGungle. And. Oh, there's a bunch. There's so much weird. I love it. I mean, we've made notes over all of it. It's been such a fun time going through these. So, one of the things that was easy for me last season with Middleman, that was different this time. Middleman is a joyous, cartoony, kind of low stakes feeling show sometimes. I mean, there's no, it's not trying for like, there's no kidnapped children or anything. Like Happy Town, whether viewers took it as seriously or not, Happy Town was swinging for some more pathos and serious, you know, like the Magic Man. There's a serial killer for fuck's sake. Whereas Middleman was just this joyous train, like roller coaster ride. And so I got to clip through all of season one of Good Die Young, just praising Middleman. I mean, there are no flaws to that show. I'm sorry. I'll slap taste out of your mouth if you think you found one. You didn't. There's nothing wrong with that show. Happy Town has flaws. It has plot hole spots. It has lines that just land like a brick.
Name 17 examples.
Right? and it was difficult in the first couple of episodes that you and I recorded to not lose sight of that for me. And something that you and I've talked about before is that I'm particularly bad at criticizing things. If you are really wanting to hate watch or bash or be sarcastic or snarky and tear something apart, you can't have me on your podcast because
Yeah, you would be terrible to get drunk with in Mystery Science Theater something. Yeah,
I'm bad at it. I will find some shiny facet of that gym covered in shit, and then I will talk endlessly about it until I ruin your time.
I don't know. Someone really worked hard on the hand puppet.
Right? That's exactly the asshole I am if anybody's trying to do that. And so it makes me really bad at a certain flavor of podcast and a certain flavor of very fun film crit. But what I wanted to do with Good Die Young was to kind of focus on that. Like, what is that with me where I tend to love shows that get canceled, which means I love shows that, look, I'll be real, they're not all because the world is unfair. Some of them are. Some of them are terriers, man. Some of them are perfect gem shows that just didn't get seen. And that is what I'm trying to skew towards with Good Die Young. But I recognize that things get canceled because they didn't connect somehow. And so when we started watching Happy Town, it's easy to slip into, or it was easy for me to start to slip into a bitterness where I felt like I was apologetically defending the show. And that wasn't the tone that I was trying to get through at all. And so I held off for like a week or two. I didn't know how to ask you to re-record them. It wasn't anything you did. But I did, you know, listeners at home, I asked Nick to completely re-record the first two or three episodes, I believe, because we had clipped through some and I just realized that it was just not the show I wanted to put out. And so when we went back to it, we changed to the Madcap recap and just blew through it because it added like this manic fun, which to me got to the spirit of what was great about Happy Town and why I... Mm-hmm. And that was the root of it. I wanted to get to a point where I figured out what about the show made me not give a shit about its flaws. And so I feel like you really helped me then dial in that exact answer to that exact question. What about this show makes it so fun that you are willing to ignore so many weird things? Because, I mean, if the show was going at half the speed, I wouldn't put up with it.
Right. No, I think that's my theory, is that it moves unbelievably fast and... legitimately, it's hard for, if you watch a lot of TV or movies, it's hard to find a plot line that you won't like at least kind of see coming with some of this stuff. It's very hard to take you by surprise after a while. Mm-hmm. So in this show too, why I liked Gotham so much, and I had the same relationship with these with both shows, in which, man, I don't know if I really like watching these, and then by the end of it, it's like I have to keep watching this because the craziness, the inconsistency, and the out of nowhere makes no sense twists. Actually, somewhere along the line, they're no longer the bug. They're the feature.
Yeah.
Like you're watching for like, what are they going to do now?
Yeah. This show is, we already did this. Yeah. This show is beyond your outdated concepts of good and bad. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, oh man, if they did this in episode 3, what are they going to do for the finale? Like, that's what my mindset was. Oh man, the cinnamon monologue is in episode 4. I don't understand what they're going to do after that, because that was the craziest shit I've ever seen. Yeah.
It's like episode 4 or 5 that they suddenly reveal that the Magic Man is a global phenomenon, which is game changing. And then it's not until like episode 7 that they actually even show you the Blue Door film at all. And mm-hmm. it's got Big Dave in it. And that's
dropped never in touched there. Like, on again. Wait, go back.
Yeah. Cause like, if it's my theory where, you know, dead missing people in the town are suddenly appearing in the film, that means that Peggy Haplin owns a film that now has her granddaughter in it.
Right.
I mean, like,
would John find that one day or something?
And this show, yeah. How did Andrew not notice his little sister's in the movie? I mean, is that why the tear ran down his cheek and he realized he couldn't leave town? We don't know. Happy Town. Like, the sheer scope of the bug shitness in this show is so out there. And I was thrilled that you agreed to re-record. I mean, you very easily could have been like, man, I don't have time to re-record this. And I was thrilled that you did, because it was very important to me that I not inadvertently make a show that walks me through something I love, but ends up putting across an encyclopedic list of reasons why this show sucks. And, mm-hmm. you know, I wanted listeners at home to be able to get what's making the why this show stuck in my brain for 10 years. You know, you got this cast, you got creators that are just wanting to write it, they just love language. I mean, it's got a very John from Cincinnati, like, y'all just want to write this language. You just do, like, whether the audience likes it or not, fuck it. Everybody's just going to speak like this.
And yeah, like, that's kind of like, I always try and judge the show on basically what it's trying to do. What is its goal? And for Happy Town, I think the goal was for a lot of writers to get like a creative angst almost out of their bodies. Like this, just, okay, this show is almost doomed to begin with, and I know it. So I'm going to throw all this creative juice that I was told no before. There's no no's anymore. It's just yes, yes to everything. And yeah. I feel the yes in every decision, you know, like there's kind of a just positive that energy.
You know, on Middleman, Javi talked about them having a stupid stick in the writer's room. It was a carryover from, I believe, a Next Generation Star Trek. The showrunner there did it. And it was a big goofy stick. Like, one had doorknobs glued to it and a bunch of just, like, it was an actual stick, decorated scepter. And if you were holding the stick, you could pitch anything and no one would shit on it. And so it was there to, it was there to free you up, because otherwise young writers in the room, like, you don't want to say something that's just going to get you slapped down. Right.
Get laughed at. Yeah.
But then the room ends up missing out on the whole reason to have new voices. So they had the stupid stick, and I don't think they had a stupid stick in the Happy Town room. I think it was understood in the contracts when they got hired.
I think the room was the stupid stick.
You could say,
like, they lived in the stupid stick.
Yeah, it's the imaginary. I honestly, it's like the Imaginarium from fucking Community, like, or Imagitorium or whatever, that Dreamatorium, whatever the thing they built.
Dreamatorium.
Yeah. From Community. Like, I really feel like it was just like a tape gridded room where the Happy Town writers could go in and throw anything against the wall and everything stuck.
Yeah.
I feel like, especially like episode 5, I think, was the one I was editing where I went, we got it. This is exactly the show I meant to make about this. And from there forward, like, I'm in love with how we really got to the heart of what I was wanting to say about why this show is fun and really the heart of what I love about television. You know, nothing grand, no big visions, but I feel like this podcast got at that this season in a way that Middleman was too easy. I loved it, and it didn't challenge me to understand still loving it and recognizing that there are fucking problems with this show. There just are.
Well, when you have like a show like Middleman or Firefly or Terriers, it's always like, man, the show was one pitch meeting away, or one, you know, someone, just one producer didn't have faith in it, or was one year away from the right internet like thing. And Happy Town is one you watch and you go, yeah, I can totally see why a producer went, what the fuck is this? Okay, yeah, we're not greenlighting this anymore. No, you can't do that. What are you talking about? We can't have a child killing on ABC. You got to change that up. Like, I actually see from the producer's perspective of like, yeah, I'm not sure I would greenlit this show, but it's fascinating to really keep watching and see where it's going.
Yeah. I mean, I've now watched this whole thing straight through 3 times, and I've watched individual episodes 5 or 7 times. It's still just mind-blowing. I mean, that's not counting the times that I've scanned through them, pulling audio clips and stuff. Like, it's like a radio play. I mean, every ounce of this show is as nutty as any other. It's really amazing. Like, every time I start to think like, oh my God, it's starting to dry, then I remember, oh shit, no, this is coming up, or this line. Yeah.
Right. I always love the idea of like, we're going to have stereotypical redneck villains. Like, oh, okay, what are they going to do? Charity work.
Yes.
What? Yeah, they're never going to do anything villainous, but they are the villains. I'm not sure we can swing that. Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. The Stivalettos are both the most upstanding citizens in town, and also the cross-the-tracks villains that get blamed for everything.
Seriously, they never do anything on screen that is actually against the law or even morally dubious.
So I wanted to talk to the Stivaletto. I wanted to talk to those actors anyway, especially one of the Stivalettos is on Letterkenny.
Yeah.
And now I want to talk to him about Happy Town, but I don't think I could. I would just want to talk to him about being McMurray on Letterkenny.
Oh, thanks. I understand that you're a fan of the show. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. I've seen that guy on a ton of stuff over the years, but, oh, man. He's always great. And the Stivalettos, we say it every episode, the Stivalettos are the best thing on Happy Town. Like, they make that show for me.
Look, if you got a problem with the Stivalettos, you got a problem with me, and I suggest you let that one marinate.
Yep. That's a Texas size 10-4, good buddy. So... one of the things about Making Good Die Young, and Nick, you make your own podcast over on UGO. You did Pod Against Evil. You've Netflix and Kill. You've got a bunch of shit going. So, you know, if you do any interview component or even just scheduling with co-hosts, these things take time to get the raw audio. And then you've got another step of editing those and adding in, you know, show clips or things like that, getting it produced the way you want it. And then, you know, it's not a lot of time, but there's a little bit of headache of actually setting up the web page and uploading the, you know, all of these things take 30 minutes to an hour or a couple hours. And there's a lot of little components where your life can get in the way. Cause this is for most of us, a hobby project. For me on Good Die
Young, there's no supervisor making you get it out every Tuesday. No.
And it works a little so that this is a hobby project about something. If you have any insecurity about what you're doing or sheepish about it at all, there's a moment where you go, this is a show no one wanted to watch that I don't know anyone who's seen, and yet I want to make a deep dive podcast about it that's going to take hours per episode for me to make. Why am I doing this? Like, surely there's something I should be doing for my family instead, or a chore, or I should be working extra hours somewhere. If I, like, your brain just can throw in a million different reasons why this is the biggest, most selfish, solipsistic waste of time that you could devote energy to. And it makes it hard to defend this in your schedule when you really do have to defend this in your schedule and make time, or we all know projects don't happen. And so Good Die Young carries also a component of trying to, because for me, just deep diving through these wouldn't be enough. I really want the interviews. I love the interviews paired with them. And so I really won't pick a show unless I can do the interviews with it. I was going to do Black Donnelly's and I couldn't get enough access, so we didn't do it. I was able to get access to Happy Town. And so that became the one that, you know, I did. So I always try to keep two or three shows in mind because I don't know which one I'll get to talk to people with. But it usually takes, you know, 6 months total or so to schedule them and get them together, and those interviews go well and those actors tell another actor, and then I get, you know, you end up talking to an extra person in the cat. Like, these things build out, you know. Once I talk to Davey Holmes, that helps me talk to Andre Nimick and Scott and Josh Applebaum. They helped me talk to Scott Rosenberg, who got me in touch. Then Josh got me in touch with Jeff Stoltz, who put me in touch with Amy Acker. And like, these things build out over time. But consequently, I end up with audio recorded for months that's just sitting there. And then for me this time, I then got in my head about it and it felt like a waste of time that I was being stupid about. And then once I got behind on it, and again, this is my schedule, so I'm only behind in my head. It turned into a thing of like, well, should I just call it and hope everybody forgets that I said I was going to do that thing?
Yeah. Well, when I mean, when you record a show, like,
fucking famous people, like, yeah, they know I interviewed them.
You get a backlog. So you like, oh, I can't not do this. I have too much content and an investment.
Yeah.
But you have so much work to then do because you haven't like you've backloaded like a bunch of, you've basically created, you've seen the amount of work. Like normally when you start a podcast, you don't really see the mountain ahead of you. You just get to slowly walk up it. But yeah, when you have like when you do like an interview and you know everything, like, oh man, I'm going to work this in and this, you realize how big the project is, and then it's harder to, you start or even get initiative on it.
Yeah. And then enough time ran by, I started to get real weird about it. And I know you've run into similar stuff. I mean, some of mine is depression issues and just getting in my head about shit. And I've been a lot better about it these last 6-7 months. But there was it's part of why this took. I set out expecting Good Die Young season 2 to come out 1 year after season 1. And it ended up being almost a year and a half. And that wasn't because it wasn't all recorded in time to do it at 1 year. I just couldn't do it. And I'm so glad that I pushed through, because the response has been wonderful, and I had a great time doing it. And as I've edited it, I've remembered just how much I love what we made here.
Yeah. And for me, especially this TV episode by episode breakdowns of anything are like probably the hardest podcasting project I've ever been a part of. Cause with other stuff, like, you know, just talk shows or like our interview stuff, movie reviews, like what we do for Netflix and Kill. Maybe I'll throw in the theme song, throw in maybe the trailer for the movie, throw in a musical break for a spoiler section, and boom, done. That's all the editing I really do, unless something really fucked up on the recording. But with an episode by episode, you have a lot more. You have a lot more creative stuff to do with, like, oh, here I can play some of the audio of this crazy dialogue we're talking about. But then the more you do that, suddenly it's a whole thing of like throwing these things together. I remember I started to do on Potting's Evil, there was a joke that Stan was like, he was talking about Evil Knievel, and he suddenly like he starts talking about how hot he is, and it's like, wait, I've gotten off topic. And then because whenever we would get off topic, I would start using that quote of like, what were we talking about again? And then I would play the Stan quote of like, yeah, I've gotten off topic, because I thought that was funny. I didn't realize how often we would do that, though. Yeah. And when you do a joke like that, it's not like you can inconsistently do it. Like, if you can't do it once for a time and then again sort of later. If you start doing it twice, it's a people expect it as a pattern.
I almost did that exact same thing. There's a clip of Georgia and Andrew where Georgia says, well, somebody doesn't like you very much.
That would have been funny.
And so twice I used it, once in the actual episode where it happened, but then I used it one more time, and then I had a moment of like, but I probably don't want to get into consistently doing this every single time we say Andrew's the fucking worst, because it's too many times.
We're going to say it a lot.
Yeah, because he's the worst, and we say it a lot. Yeah. In thinking about that same time delay and knowing that like I've got momentum right now, and one of the killers is a gap between projects sometimes. You know, you think, well, I need a break, but it really just kind of ends up shifting your habit away from having that space in your life and schedule to do the work. I wanted to get the next Good Die Young started. So I went ahead and sent out, I guess, three Saturdays ago now. I just went ahead and sent out emails to the show that I had kind of decided would be the next show, knowing that, you know, if nobody responds to me, cool, we'll move to the next show. I have a long list of shows I've loved that died. so it's not a problem to go. There's a deep bench of canceled shows. So I sent out emails to the whole writer's room and the showrunner and a couple of the executives and all of the principal cast for Chaos, which is a, there's a lot of shit called Chaos, so it was actually hard to search for on IMDb. It's a one season show from 8-10 years ago, which I seem to have a theme here, that starred Freddie Rodriguez from 6 Feet Under and Planet Terror, the Grindhouse film. And it's got Tim Blake Nelson and Rick Overton, who's a comic I love. It's also got Kurtwood Smith, and I'm blanking on who plays his assistant, but it's another actress that you'd recognize. The original premise for it was The Office, but set at the CIA. Only the network clearly wanted a bomb of the week crime procedural. And what ended up happening is this this show that I remember like an aftertaste being The Office at the CIA. Like, my memory of Chaos is that show. But that's not really quite what they got to make. And instead, you're watching comedy writers making this show that got canceled at episode 3 and still had to run its 13 episodes. And it's just weird. Like, I still think of it sometimes, because, I mean, fucking nobody seems to have seen this show. Even among our weird hardcore TV watching friends, like, nobody knows what this is.
I mean, you keep bringing up shows that have these weird casts. I'm like, wait a minute, Sam Neill and Amy Acker and like all these people were in one show, like, and I know what that show was.
Yeah, like there's got to be a story here. It's like when you're at Redbox or something and you see a movie that's got five name actors you know never came out in the theater, and you're like, this is going to be bad, but I have to rent it to see somewhere in this. There's going to be like one shining decision that is the reason this is at Redbox and not in the theater, and, you know?
Sure.
And I want to see what it is.
You see something called, you know, Cold Vengeance or something, and Bruce Willis's face is on there. Like, okay, that makes sense. Christopher Walken, okay, yeah, sure. Nicolas Cage, yeah, that, you know, I see that coming. And then suddenly you see Chris Pratt, and like, wait, what? What happened? What is going on?
Yeah, yeah. And that's so Chaos is a show that had too many cooks in the kitchen, and it failed by everybody doing their jobs. Everybody showed up and gave it 100%, but there were way too many people at odds with each other, trying to give 100% at different goals. And you end up with this mishmash show that just got killed. I mean, that they killed it before it even had a chance to fly. But it will always exist. There will these episodes will always be out there. Anyway, this was the show that I wanted to do. It satisfies all my requirements. It's a show I still think of this many years later. It's a one season show. And it's got a kind of weird inside baseball story as to where it might have gone wrong, you know? And I emailed everybody on a Saturday, and by Sunday morning, Freddie Rodriguez just called me. Like, I thought we were scheduling, and my phone rang. The decision got made immediately. I guess I'm doing Chaos. I just talked to the lead. And then one of the writers called me because it was her very first professional show, and she was so excited to talk about it. When I called people about Happy Town, they honest to God thought I was pranking them. And sure. And so
you get a lot of calls like, "Is Jerry, is this you? I told you to stop doing this. Like, come on."
Scott Rosenberg wrote Beautiful Girls. I mean, he wrote the first draft. He's one of the credited screenwriters on Venom. I mean, the guy's got a career. He wrote Con Air, for fuck's sake. Andre and Josh wrote Ghost Protocol. Like, Happy Town's not the thing on their resume to call them about. But they love talking about it. And so far, that seems to be going that way with Chaos as well. It's already come together so fast that I'm really trying to take away the lesson from Happy Town that it was just in my head to wait on this like it's a project nobody wanted or something. I want it, and that ought to be enough, honestly. I can hear the joy in these people's voices when they get to talk about their project, and I know the joy I feel in just learning these fucked up stories. And I haven't asked you officially, but I still feel like just me droning on about this show will not be good, and that I should have a co-host. Can I drag you through Chaos?
Oh, boy, public, asking here. My goodness. Well, I feel like
I'm going to record this and edit it later, so you're going to say yes no matter what.
Having just brought so much order with Happy Town, you know, having so much structure and consistency, I think a show called Chaos would be a great change of pace and would not be frustrating in any way whatsoever.
Not at all.
I would love to. That sounds. If anything, just to see Tim, I thought you was a toad, Nelson.
As the heavy. He's the human weapon.
That's hilarious.
It is wonderful. It is wonderful. Also, the episodes aren't streaming anywhere, so and they aired out of order.
sure.
They didn't just call the show Chaos. They really took it to heart. So here's to me not waiting so long. It seems like everybody wants to come together quick on it. So I'm going to set a goal of having the Chaos season out this fall and not a year and a half from now. So listeners at home, I can't thank y'all enough for coming on this journey with us twice now. And I hope you'll follow us to the next show. Super glad to have Nick with me.
Oh, well, thank you, Les. I'm glad to be here. It's been a fun time.
Well, here's to Chaos. I think you'll dig it. And I hope everybody enjoyed Happy Town. I love it. It'll probably be a minute before I watch it again.
yes. As but, we say goodbye to Haplin.
Yes.
Haplin, happy. Oh, just
did that. You just get it?
Oh.
The Good Die Young is an independently run podcast produced by Les Weiler and hosted as part of the Permanent Record Network. We can be found on the web at thegooddieyoungtv.com. Les can be found doing weekly television commentary at www.thetvdudes.com. Thanks for listening.